Once great Aiken Fortune. She was a spinster, so even though the fortune was greatly diminished, it outlived her. In her last days, she had one wish for the remainder of her fortune. She wanted the city of Charleston to take her old home on 91 Meeting Street, kitty corner across the street from the Circular Congregational Church, with the purpose of turning it into a foundling hospital. The orphanage in Charleston did not have adequate staff for the care of infants who require constant attention. As such, children under the age of 3, who were not yet capable of feeding, dressing, and caring for themselves, were not accepted into the orphanage. Eliza Aiken wanted somewhere safe for these children to be cared for during these years that they were the most vulnerable. It was her dying wish. The city of Charleston accepted this request, as I have never known any governmental body to be reluctant to receive any item of financial value. This is hardly surprising. Eliza had described the address in her will as a wood home made of 2 dwellings, each of 2 stories. In other words, it was a duplex. The city council decided that rather than follow Eliza's wishes exactly, they wanted to make the arrangements as beneficial to themselves as possible. Again, not exactly surprising behavior from a room full of politicians. They decided to rent out one of the dwellings within the house, breaking it into several apartments and charging rent for it. These funds, in addition to the monies Eliza had left behind, went towards the care of the foundlings. They limited the amount of foundlings that needed to be cared for on these funds by undercutting Eliza's final wishes by adding some extra stipulations. In short, while Miss Aiken had stated in the will that the city was to form a hospital for abandoned infants, the city of Charleston, not Eliza Aiken, specified that this was to mean white infants. Since white people were only 46% of the city's population at the time, this likely cut the amount of infants that the city would be responsible for by at least half. One more thing. You see, history has shown a certain pattern, and it has to do with organizations run by individuals versus organizations run by governmental bodies of nearly all sizes. When an individual owns a company, they need to be aware of things like quality and performance, or people will take their business elsewhere. They are held to a specific standard, and their community votes for that standard with their dollars. When an organization is run by a governmental body, performance doesn't matter, because no one is held responsible and everyone gets paid regardless of performance. Small, family-owned farms fed the country for years, but the government sticks their nose into agriculture and within a few short decades over half the population is obese, diabetic, and celebrating meat-free Mondays while celebrities tell us how cool it would be if we all started to eat bugs. Prior to World War I, America had some of the highest test scores in the world. But as more and more schools became quote-unquote public, our scores have dropped into the 20s, dropping as quickly as the assumption abroad that Americans are stupid sharply rose. Don't get me started on the post office delivering my mail to my neighbor and their 110-pound trained attack dog for 3 years despite multiple requests to correct the issue, after which I received a notice that, according to the post office, my address didn't exist, and since they were the government, they were never, ever, 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 ever wrong ever, despite the fact that the house had been at that address since before I was born and the previous owners, aka my other neighbors, had rented that property for at least 20 years. Oddly, every bit of mail, every parcel that was delivered to me by a non-government company like Amazon had no such issue. They were put neatly on my doorstep. My point is that when an organization is run by people who also happen to make up the ruling government of the area, there was no one to hold them accountable for their performance, no one to force them to be true to their word. Such was the case of the benevolent gift and the well-meaning wishes of Miss Eliza Aiken. Miss Aiken passed away in 1842, and in 1848, the house on Meeting Street had fallen into such disrepair that when a foundling was dropped off at the local orphanage, the agent charged with taking the child to the foundling hospital refused to leave the baby there when he arrived. He observed that both the floor and the roof were rotting out, and the place was completely unsuitable for a child. In 1845, Eliza's brother James even sued the city of Charleston on the grounds that they were accepting the property, they had accepted the responsibilities outlined in his sister's will, and that the city was not even close to holding up their end of the work. They had only repair, and it is hinted by Dr. Nick Butler, the historian at the Charleston County Public Library, on the Charleston Time Machine podcast, that part of the reason for James's lawsuit may have also had to do with the city making the Foundling Hospital racially exclusive, which was also not within his sister's last wishes. In October of that same year, the city dismissed the lawsuit. Go figure. If that wasn't frustrating enough, starting in 1850, the city decided that it was best for them to get a little more interpretive about how Eliza intended for her fortune to be used. Instead of repairing the building per the requests of the nurses at the Foundling Hospital and the complaints from the orphanage, they decided instead to rent out the entire building. From there on out, when a foundling was discovered, the finder was to contact the mayor, who would then use the funds from the tenants and the Aiken Foundation on the property to hire a nurse for the baby until they were old enough to be moved to the city orphanage. Part of the reason given for this was that we had had so few foundlings to care for, but when you were catering to only half of the population, that's going to happen. In 1852, a little baby was left at the orphan house, and the tiny infant was so sick and jaundiced that it was hard to tell her race. Now, to anyone with an ounce of humanity, when you find a brand new baby sick and suffering outside on your doorstep, that would be the least of your worries. But not for this crowd. No, no. At first, the doctor couldn't determine her skin tone, two more doctors were brought in to examine her, and an entire board kept her as the sole focus of their discussion for 2 weeks while she was nourished and was finally well enough that her skin cleared up and it was determined that the tiny baby was black and thus ineligible for the city's help. Beyond this, she's never mentioned again. She disappears from history. No one knows what happened to her, all alone in the world. But if she lived, she would only be 13 years old when slavery was abolished, and she would be free. On December 11, 1861, a massive fire swept through the city, taking out much of the French Quarter. In this event, the wooden house, or what was left of it, burned down without a trace. The city sold the property, and by the end of the Civil War, the Aiken Hospital Trust Fund was quietly dissolved, suspiciously without a trace. I honestly chose this episode before I knew how grim the topic would be. I knew that a wealthy lady with no heirs donated her money and home to be a safe place for abandoned babies to live and be cared for. I thought it was sweet. And I'm sure if poor Eliza had had her way, the story would be as lovely as I had expected it to be. Instead, what I learned is that when you leave something in your will, greedy people will always find a loophole. Despite her good intentions, Eliza was robbed, and in being robbed, many children were robbed too. It is said that there is nothing new under the sun, and our society's disregard for those too young to speak up or fight for themselves has been around as long as children have been difficult to raise. I also learned that if you have wishes to put into your will, for the love of all that is good, do not trust the government to carry out your final requests. They will always think they know what's best for you, but it will always conveniently line up with what's best for them. Imagine that. Best to trust such matters to an agent, executor, or someone you trust, not only to honor your wishes, but also to outlive you, which is, let's face it, the really tricky part. Especially back then when there was, you know, yellow fever and malaria and all that kind of thing. But you want to pick someone who will truly represent you and your wishes, and not to trust the beneficiary to interpret for themselves the extent of their own gain. I don't know why Eliza didn't leave James in charge of seeing that her requirements were met. Possibly because he lived several states away, and that was a much bigger deal almost 2 centuries ago. But even so, he tried to fight for her. Unfortunately, it was too late for him to win, and by then, their family home had already begun to decay. I love Charleston, and I love learning more about the beautiful city I live in. But for all its beauty, history has its ugly moments, and we should always accept the facts and the truth, the good and the bad, in order to grow and to face the future with the wisdom we have gleaned from the past. This story makes me sad. Sad for James and Eliza, and unspeakably sad for all the infants who were first abandoned, then robbed of the home that was meant to be theirs. Overall, this episode was a great big bummer. But next time I plan on doing an episode on the Pepsi Cola Company, which should be more peppy, or at least more caffeinated. When I went to North Carolina to research Blackbeard and the Rum Keg Girl, I found myself in New Bern, where the famous Cola Company was born, and the little flags with black bears with their tongues out reminded me of my dear sweet dog that I grew up with. She would have liked it, and I hope you will too. Thanks again for joining me today, and a special thanks to Lee for subscribing to the show through Spotify. You are amazing, and I am so grateful. I hope everyone has a beautiful weekend, and I look forward to our next story time together.